The Brian Golf Show.
Four!
Presented by Cobra Puma Golf.
That was an excellent shot.
Yeah, real good form.
And we got another guest in the Brian Golf Studios. That's what I call this, by the way. His name is Wes Altus. You can follow him on Instagram and everywhere. Wes Altus Golf. It's A-L-T-I-C-E. Which I truly thought your name was Wes Altice, which, you know, is kind of a cool name. But welcome to the show and welcome to Brian Golf, the Brian Golf Studios. Wes Altus.
Thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure to finally be on and have some fun, man. I'm looking forward to it.
I know. So you've been in and out of here. You know, this is Mel's. I'm calling it Mel's coach.
Yeah,
I like picking your brain. You're my guy. All right, that's just it. You're my guy. But what I'm saying is, like, Mel, you've changed Mel's game because it was really bad, really, really bad in her swing. Now she can actually hit 7 irons, like 80 yards, which never, actually she hits her 7 iron better than she hits a driver now all of a sudden.
Okay.
So that's, but man alive, what a difference that's been. So, but we randomly kind of met through Instagram, you know, in Jacksonville. You are the director of instruction at Top Golf here in Jax.
You got it.
So, you know, it's a place that we all like to frequent. Not so much for me, the golf, but more the food and the booze. But, you know, you do work out in and out of there. So it makes sense that we eventually in this city kind of run around same circles.
Absolutely.
Golf is small. So,
especially, you know, in Jacksonville,
right? It really, I mean, it really is.
It is.
Everybody knows all the same people. We get people walking in and out of here and they're like, yeah, this guy worked with you. And I'm like, really? And then like 2 weeks later, somebody's like, hey, I saw you worked with so-and-so. And it's like, whoa, the three of you people aren't in the same, you shouldn't know each other, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it happens. It happens a lot. So, well, talk to us about Wes and where Wes came from, how he got from, you know, wherever you're from to Jacksonville to where you're at director instruction at Top Golf, and also the head of the Brian Golf Academy that doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist. Yeah,
doesn't
position,
exist.
But I'll take it.
Unofficial title.
Right. Well, keep it short. Born in Wisconsin, so big Packer fan for all you Bears fans. Bears still suck. It was in Wisconsin for 10 years. Moved to Orlando, Florida. That's basically from age 10 all the way up through senior year in high school. Played volleyball and golf in high school. Then went to University of North Florida. Was considering walking on the golf team, but volleyball at the time was kind of overriding everything. So we started our own little club team at UNF.
Oh.
Played on that. We traveled all over the Southeast, you know, all the big schools, everything. Probably the shortest middle blocker ever at 6'1". But luckily I was fast and could jump and have long gangly arms, so that also helps. And kind of rolled into, you know, golf as a profession. I was working at Marsh Landing as a cart attendant. Saw how cool it was the pros could walk out and teach and just hit balls while they're working. I'm like, well, that's way better than getting a desk job, man. So I'm like, I'm doing the golf route. And I had a great mentor, Brad Hauer. He was my first golf coach when I came into the state of Florida and kind of kept a great relationship, kind of hit him up. He put me in contact. And first assistant's job was at the Legacy Club at Aliquil Lakes in Lake Mary, Florida, then moved over to Metro West, and then reconnected again with Brad at Hammock Beach Resort, which we all know and love.
Yes.
Worked there for 10 years, and then, you know, it was like, yeah, the teaching thing is awesome. I had fun doing it, and then just happened to Top Golf rolled around and director of instruction and gave that a whirl, and here we are today.
Right.
So it's been a cool journey. You know, learned a lot from, you know, kind of hooked up with Michael Manavian, who we all know, and he kind of shed the light on stack and tilt a little bit and had conversations with him, went through several trainings under Andy Plummer, and then another big influence, Scott Kalk's done a couple of his certifications. So, and Andy has been just amazing to me. You know, he's always helped me out with things. So, you know, a lot of gratitude goes out to those guys for sure.
You got to have those guys in the industry too. You know, even on the fitting side of things and what I do, you know, if I didn't have like the Ian Frasers of the world to reach out to and some of the guys that I know, you know, at TruSpec, Andy Victoriano, and you've got Lauren David, some really good guys that I've always reached out to. And, you know, I don't talk all the time, but it's really funny how those guys, as experienced they are, we all ask each other questions. We all ask, like, you know,
I feel,
hey,
if
what,
you're not,
you know, I got this guy's like hitting me up going, hey, what about this shaft? And it's like, Motherfucker, you're a fitter. Like, go fit yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, go fit yourself, man. I don't know. Go hit it in the bay. See how it works. But, you know, you gotta have those guys. You know, so as far as that goes, you mentioned stack and tilt. So is that kind of where you've, because I don't understand it. Everyone's going to go, Sean Foley ruined Tiger Woods' swing, stack and tilt.
It's an easy thing to do.
Way more to it and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you teach a system, you know, or do you, as we all know, like people say, like, you know, swing your swing, do you teach how the golfer needs to be taught?
Yeah, I mean, so I think the biggest misconception of stack and tilt was the Golf Digest article where they have all these pictures of guys leaning extremely left and all that kind of stuff. But the meats and bones of it, it's a system for teaching golf based on the three-dimensional movements of the swing and, you know, how the spine works. And I think that's where it kind of people went nuts on it, because if you look at a lot of guys now, there's a lot of, you know, guys that have that influence in there.
Right.
You know, you just can see, you know, now, you know, the big thing is, you know, the trail leg loses some flex. You know, back in 1990-something, lock it down. Don't move anything.
Right. So you're talking about the extending of the right leg, you know, getting rid of that, you know, getting rid of the flex in the knee. So basically the straightening and getting that hip tilt.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
There's another word that was not wanted was tilts. Dude. If you look at every good golfer, what do? They're tilting.
They're tilting,
they
right?
They have to. No. Every good golfer tilts.
I don't see, and that's just it. When you think of stack and tilt, I actually ignore tilt completely, and I only think of stacking.
Yeah, 100%.
100%. Which I'm assuming the stacking, if you're only stacking, that's where you're going wrong probably with it.
I think everyone overdoes that piece. I get a lot of students that, you know, oh, I read the book and I've done the DVDs, and they come in and their head is outside their left leg. I'm like, okay, hold on. We need to back this up, and you've overdone a few pieces. But that's the beauty of the system. Like, you can look at what the player needs right away.
Right.
And it's based around three fundamentals, you know, contact, you know, being able to hit the ball far enough for the course you're playing, and then controlling the curve. And that's pretty much the basics of golf, right? I mean, that's what helps you get the ball in the hole as fast as possible.
Right. Now, if you make center contact, the better contact, I mean, that's what we do in fitting too. You know, majority of the time you're looking for whatever gives somebody center contact.
Yep.
How do we hit the middle, you know, by, you know, getting into the right shaft and the right club head, making a tweak here and there.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, everything could be the same, but it can be two different club heads. And all of a sudden, you know, for that person, they're hitting the middle of the club face. Therefore, hey, there's your answer. Like, that's just how it is. We want to hit the middle of the face.
100%. And I think that's where, you know, the synergy between, you know, the coach and the fitter is so important. I mean, being able to understand, you know, hey, my player needs, make sure, you know, we're trying to flatten them out a little bit so we don't need super upright clubs. You know, right. We don't want the clubs to work against. And we also want, you know, but just getting the right head shape, the shaft weight. I mean, you can just see just the differences immediately when that stuff starts to click.
Right. Yeah. Your buddy, Paul, you played with Paul, right?
Oh, yeah.
He came in here.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, he came in and he's like, dude, I played with Wes yesterday and I am crushing all of this.
Oh, my God.
He's like, my misses are so much better. The irons are the greatest. He got some T100Ss and he's just like, what, money.
He is the happiest man on the planet right now, because every time I play with him, you know, as soon as he's, you know, hitting series after shot, I'm like, man, these clubs are the best, and the wedges are awesome. You're right about wedges and this. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's what we do. But at the same time, every single piece of it matters. And I think people like, oh, I'm not going to get fit, it's not going to help. It's like, no, bro, I can't stress enough. Go get fit, especially when you got at least some competency and hitting the ball solid most of the time. To me, that's when, all right, we need to go in.
It's time. Well, because that's probably going to be where you see the next jump, right?
Big jump.
You know, in progression as far as scoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have all the time, like, I do this thing with people, you know, because they're like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to you know, justify spending that money. I'm not that good. I'm not good enough for a fitting, whatever it is. And then, like, you take them through a fitting, and at the end, you show them the difference between what they were in and what they're in now, and you know, somebody a couple weeks ago, it was a massive difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a wide dispersion rate and probably about a 15 to 20 yard difference, you know, in the new stuff with a tight dispersion rate.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, it was as simple as this. Which one of these do you think is going to shoot a better score?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, at that point, he's like, yeah, clearly that's going to help my score. I'm going to play better if that happens, and it will out on the course.
Yeah. I mean, going back to my buddy, Paul, you know, I've been giving him lessons too. And I think the biggest thing that got out of his game was just this low duck hook because nothing was right for him.
Right.
Like the shaft, I was like, that shaft is not even close. Like, just go see Brian. It will be. And the funniest thing is, like, I've never hit so many balls in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, yeah. I told you it was going to be a workout.
Dude,
like,
we were 4 hours in the bay, yeah. Like going to work.
Oh yeah.
Going,
I mean,
to
that's
work.
What makes it awesome. And being able, especially with the technology here and, you know, GC Quad, you know, being able to throw up the data and just, it's not because I'm saying, it's like, here right. You go, man. Like, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, if that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of the done deal at that point if they really want to get better.
Yeah. And so many times, you know, I wasn't even thinking about it, even though I assumed it would naturally come up, but I wasn't thinking about it and preparing to have a conversation with you. But it was like that relationship between fitter and build or club fitter, and you go, or I'm sorry, instructor and fitter, and you go, wait a second. All right. So do we work together or are we competition? You know, and a lot of times I have people ask me like, well, my buddy told me I should go spend $1,000 on lessons. And it's like, well, yeah, but by the time you get, you know, go have a lesson or two, don't spend $1,000 just on lessons.
No.
I'm saying, go get a lesson or two. And then you can start to see, like, you might get to a point where the clubs you have are holding your instructor back from progressing you because you're constantly pulling back and having to redo things because you're working away from or against the clubs that you have in the bag. So that's my biggest thing, is like getting people to understand, like, I'm pro instructor all day. I'm pro instructor and getting fit at the exact same time too. Meaning, you know, just because you're in the middle of lessons doesn't mean you can't get fit for your clubs.
No.
You know, the answers are going to be pretty close. And certain things, and this is why that relationship is so important, to your point, like if we know, like, look, this kid, you know, a lot of times 15 years old, this kid's about to gain a lot of speed. So let's err towards this, or let's go this direction. His ball striking is about to improve by, you know, because of this, let's change this variable, all 100%, those things. So
100%.
I'm assuming you get that a lot.
Yeah. It's especially, you know, the kids that are about to make the jump just cause, you know, they're about to hit their growth spurt and you're like, here, you could just see it coming down the pipe. You're like, okay, like, all of a sudden, just it feels like in 2 weeks, this kid's jumped 10 miles an hour. You know, mm-hmm. It's just like, what just happened? But yeah, to your point, you know, if you got that money to spend, you know, $1,000, you know, like you said, if you want to split it down the middle and do something, because you're right, it's going to end up, the equipment we're working with is going to be a point where, all right, it's hindering.
Yeah.
I mean, most clubs are coming in 4 degrees upright because people slice it. You know, it's like, need that. And some people need, but if they're not looking to improve that, yeah, of course you're going to go down that road.
Right.
However, if we're trying to get better and get to certain things, you know, with things being adjustable these days, you know, we can come in right in. It's like, hey, I need these two more flat because he's not, you know, 7 across anymore. You know,
well,
it's,
right,
like,
right.
Like, we need to flatten these bad boys out now.
And lie angle's weird because a lot of people just think, hey, you know, flat lie angle ball goes right, upright lie angle ball goes left. And to a certain point, yes, but when your turf interaction is so bad,
yeah,
like if you're too flat, your clubs are too flat, but your swing is a hook swing, you're going to hook the hell out of it.
100%.
The problem is you're going to have terrible turf interaction and the results just aren't going to be as consistent. Your ball striking is going to suffer.
Yep.
You know, so all the time I put people that hook the ball a little bit into something more upright and they start hitting it straighter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, you know, the way that club head is going through the turf. So it's like this weird thing where
it's very weird.
We really need to look, you know, with GC Quad, like dynamic lie angle and things like that. And then also, you know, teaming it up with what's the ball doing. But what happens if, like, I had this kid in here, his name's Justin Nichols, came in from Virginia, and he was a big kind of sweep drawer of the ball.
Sure.
You know, and if anything, he'd pull draw it when it was bad.
Yeah.
You know, he'd kind of overswing, and from that point, it was very John Daly.
Yep.
He could crush it, but every once in a while, a little too much rotation somewhere here and there. Put him in, out of all things, put him in my 6-iron. I was like, look, just hit this 6-iron. It's your, he had those clubs, those Cobra MBs.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, hit my 6-iron. My 6-iron's a degree up and it's 2 up from where he was.
Okay.
Because he was flat because he was trying to get rid of the
yeah.
hook.
Yeah.
All of a sudden he just started hitting like baby draws. It's like, dude, it's because the club is working through the turf properly.
Correct.
You know, and in fact, the turf isn't impeding your contact anymore.
Yeah.
So now we can actually get the ball cleanly you know, the club cleanly to the ball.
And you start just having, you know, like you said, the ball flight, just changes, you know, it just looks, okay, that's what we're supposed to be doing right now. So, and you, like I said, turf interaction.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And sometimes I need that, you know, like for some guys, like, you know, had a guy today, Knack. He actually hit a Mizuno CLK hybrid on 3 degrees upright. Too good. Because it was closing the face down,
okay,
but giving him numbers he's never seen before. We're trying to fill a gap here, right?
Oh, geez.
We're trying to fill a gap. Yeah. And it's like, hey, buddy, that 3-wood we just fit you for, this only goes like 10 yards behind it. We're looking for like, you know, his 3-wood was like 240, 250 club. I'm like, we need like the 220 to 230 club so. And so the Mizuno was closing the face down and he was hitting it with less loft and he was just rocketing with low spin.
Oh,
whereas
wow,
the Sim would just come through a little more flush,
yep,
cleaner, and he'd get the right amount of spin and hit it right at 220. And it was like, things like that. So you can manipulate it all the time.
It's
sometimes you need it.
Well, I mean, that's why, you know, sending people to you, I mean, that's your specialty. You know, I can see that something's not right with the equipment. I'm not going to be able to tell you exactly, but I'm like, right, something, because your moves look good, geometry's looking good, like something's just not clicking.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, maybe it's time for you to go see Brian and, you know, get that final little piece in. But I mean, you have to look at club fitting as an instructor. You really do. If you're not, you're doing your students a big disservice, in my opinion.
Well, and I would say you love what you do.
Oh, yeah.
I've talked to plenty of instructors. Plenty of golf industry guys, and they just don't love what they do.
It's sad.
It makes it so hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but...
No, that's why I won't be an instructor.
Yeah.
I mean, fitting's not super easy all the time.
No.
You get some tough fits, just like you probably have some lessons where you're like, I'm taking $100 from this person, and I don't know if that helped him that much today because, even though you probably did, it's just you're not seeing it, and they're not seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time you'll get the person that, you know, the coordination's just not there. They haven't I have people that disclose, you know, I always ask any physical limitations, yada, yada. They don't say anything. No, I'm perfectly healthy. And then like two lessons down, yeah, just let you know, I can't externally rotate my right shoulder. I'm like, info I kind of needed, man. Like they had like 7 surgeries or whatever. I'm like, that's what I mean by injury. You
right.
Know? I'm like, and I even say, I've now changed. I'm like, have you had any procedures or injuries that... And
right.
Then usually that helps. But some people just don't want to let you know, right? Especially if they're meeting you for the first time, let you know about any injuries or whatever.
Because right.
They may not be comfortable with that. But
yeah.
But it is important to let coaches know, all right, hey, I've twisted my ankle 6 or 7 times. Okay, well, maybe your ankle functionality ain't the best. So
right.
Maybe
right.
We need to, at least that way I know if something isn't correlated, I know I can move in another direction.
Yeah.
Because there might be something there that's kind of not able for us to click.
I can see
fun.
That. And yeah. I have people come in all the time. I mean, most of the time, like, you know, let's just talk about your over 50 crowd or whatever it might be. Let's just put a number on it. They'll come in and almost in that first 10 minutes of us talking, they're like, look, I had a hip replaced, you know, I'm doing better now than I was, you know, things are great, but I'm just now getting back into it. They, you know, and here they normally do it because the conversation is like, hey, I used to do this and now my driver just isn't going as far.
Sure.
But I've had X, Y, and B,
yeah.
You know, or X, Y, and Z, I don't know. Whatever.
It's letters. It makes sense.
It's you know what? It all makes sense. So, working at Topgolf, director of instruction, you know, that's a big deal. That's a big title.
Yeah.
Topgolf ain't just hiring anybody. Okay. It's a very successful company, but there is this stigma, I think, that comes to Topgolf where they go, wait, I go there to drink beer, hit golf balls, and you know, eat some finger food and kind of party with my friends. You know, you got like a DJ booth and all this there. You know, it's like, it's a great place to be. What do you mean there's like instruction there? And like, who's going to go to Topgolf to get lessons?
Yeah.
So flip that on me.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Topgolf, you know, down to the core, you know, it's an entertainment venue. I mean, it's, you know, a bowling alley, you know, just for golf, you know, that kind of stuff. People go there to have fun. And like you said, you have their adult beverages, the food's good. But I think the big thing to realize is we are here to grow the game. Like a lot of people think, oh, you're taking away our business or whatnot. It's like, no, I've got dozen students or so that never picked up a club before. Now they're out on the golf course. So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, we teach and I teach good players, you know, scratch players. I teach middle of the road, you know, just because we're a place where people that probably never touched a club come does not necessarily mean that's all we teach.
Right.
Or, you know, we don't have a deep understanding of, you know, ball flight and, you know, biomechanics and that kind of stuff. I mean, we're, like you said, it's a big company. You want every facet of your business to be as perfect as it can get. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, they do screen the coaches very well. You know, we all education, you know, just getting certifications. Not everyone teaches the same, but they know what they're doing. So the big thing is, you know, just like any coach, you find the right one, you like to stick with them and
right,
so on and so forth. But yeah, we teach the full gamut of people. I mean, we do playing lessons, you know, we got, you know, deals with certain courses where we can take our students out and do the playing lesson piece, you know, bunker stuff. So it's just not like, all right, I go to Top Golf, I just hit off a mat all day and that's
okay.
It.
Okay. And see, that's what I think everybody thinks.
Yeah. I mean, it's a full service type thing. Like right. we can do it all. And, you know, with the partnership with Callaway, we still can, you know, fit Callaway clubs if we want to. My big thing is you're the guy. So I like the professional to do that stuff.
So it's why I don't teach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like I tell people all the time, like when they ask what we do here, like, well, we're custom club fitting and building, and obviously we can do repair, whatever you want, you know, done to a golf club. We'll figure out how to make it, you know, what you want. But, you know, we don't teach. I always say we don't teach. I say we got a guy that we allowed to teach here, and we love having him here, and we'd be happy to recommend him, but I'm not teaching,
you know,
and that's just not what we do, and we won't get into that. We won't dip our, you know, I've certainly, aside from the certain tip, obviously
sure.
I think being a fitter and being a very good fitter, you got to know the golf swing enough.
Yeah.
For sure. Certain things. You at least need to know the dynamics of the golf swing.
Oh, 100%.
Like the why and how these things happen. Yeah. So, you know, with that at Topgolf, I guess when you're teaching people there, is it different than when you teach people out on the range? Is it different when you're here using GC Quad? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, do you change... Like today, you worked with Matt.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, we've reshafted his irons. We got him dialed in. I got him a new driver. Got him set up. He's all pumped.
Yep.
And he's like, all right, next step, introduce me to Wes. I want to get lessons. Any difference if Matt was to go see you at Top Golf or on the range at, you know, Hammock Beach 5 years ago or here?
Yeah.
Is there a difference?
Probably the biggest. I conduct all my lessons exactly the same. I'll interview him. Hey, what's your biggest heartburn about your game? You know, what hurts them the most when they go out and play, basically? It's like, what's your biggest thing? And, you know, Matt's an example. You know, his misses weren't terrible, but, you know, the contact wasn't great. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he obviously comes way too far from the inside. So the arc bottoms out a little early, and he didn't understand that, but he's read all the Golf Digest articles and this. So he's never taken a lesson before, and I see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, you understand what you're supposed to do, but you did it too much. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as like the lessons looking different, I mean, obviously having the tech here with GC Quad helps me quantify some things. Like, hey, yep, look, your ball speed just jumped up. I mean, I can tell them, all right, now you're hitting your 7-iron in the blue instead of bouncing it into the blue target.
Right.
So little things, but I think when people see numbers, to me, numbers is the weight in gold because it keeps me accountable and it keeps the player accountable, being like, hey, yeah, you're right. I am hitting it 130 and was hitting it 122 or whatever.
You can't lie on with numbers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, I'll consult a player when we're in a fitting and say he hits like three or four shots and one of them is just a gross miss hit that, you know, I like talk to him. I'm like, I'm going to take this out of this set here. But like, I need you to know why we're taking it out and I need you to understand or I need you to kind of give me the okay that when we're all done here and I recommend this driver, that one shot isn't like, well, I hit that one like this. It's like, no. Like that was probably a bad swing, you know, whatever. It's a foreign golf club.
We're not machines either.
Right. All of that. So yeah, I love having that, you know, because where I was getting at with that is the data doesn't lie.
No.
But every once in a while I hear these places where you do go someplace and you kind of put the elevation up and you kind of, and the ball starts going.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Whatever it may be. You know, I've seen that plenty of times. I've seen people, you know, TrackMan indoors, which I'm not the biggest fan of, will get a misread. And you can see when it's a misread and they'll be like pumped about those numbers. And it's like, dude, it missed all of the data.
Yeah.
It didn't see your club face. It only sent the ball dead straight 320 out to the right a little. But that was going to slice.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like it'll make. So there's ways that it kind of can manipulate and trick, but the data shouldn't really lie.
No, it shouldn't lie. And especially, I mean, if you're going to someone who is good at what they do, they don't need to manipulate numbers.
Yeah.
Like I've seen it happen a million times. You know, I had a student went to a place and yeah, I was hitting my driver 50 yards further. I'm like, how much did your ball speed go? And the math was not making sense.
I'm like,
I don't know if that's right, but I'm not, wasn't there, so I can't say anything, but it just didn't sound right. And then he was hitting balls. I'm like, that really isn't going that much further. So, yeah. But I mean, it is what it is. You got to be careful as a consumer, just like with everything else. You know, if it's too good to be true, sometimes it is. But, and, you know, going back to keeping the coach accountable is, you know, using, you know, at least some video. Like, hey, this is what the change is. This is what it looks like. I know it feels awful.
You know? It feels awful because you've never done it before.
Yeah, it's like even just, you know, with Matt today, just getting a little bit more turn with the hands a little higher, you know, he probably felt like he was Bubba Watson. He was like Rory McIlroy. You know, it's still like, you know, the planes are still good. You know, left arms across the shoulder. That's where he was at. But before he was like down on his nipples basically with his arms. Like yeah. It did not get up.
And yeah.
So for him to hit the draw, he had to really, you know, kind of was talking about go humping, you know, early extending to try and get the club out to the right. So I think the big jump for him was just, he was kind of simple in a way. He's like, hey, man, just hit down more.
Yeah. You know, just he does. Like, he picks and swings up on everything.
100%. But I mean, once he got that concept in and, you know, dug a little bit more, you know, he's a bowler. Mm-hmm. So he likes to see everything curved to the left. So he definitely doesn't want to lose that curve to the left look because that's what he sees. So you got to also keep that in mind for players, you know, just because, you know, the draw is the magic thing for people. If they like seeing a left to right ball, you better know how to coach that player to do that and do it better.
Well, it's the worst when you're used to one thing and you start seeing another thing and you didn't ask for it.
Right. No.
If you're a drawer of the ball and you want a fade and you get a fade, great. But if you're a drawer of the ball and you don't want to see that ball fade at all and you start fading or vice versa, if you're a fader and you start hooking, you're going to be scrambling.
Well, you scramble and then you're freaked out. Now you don't know what to do and you don't know what to believe and making sure you communicate to the student like, hey, you might see this ball happen because you're overdoing something. But 9 times of 10, I go, when you go to go time and tee it up, that's going to bounce out somewhat and be more closer to what you were originally doing. It's just not going to be as much.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned early extension because that's something that, like, I would say that's, for me, the biggest misunderstanding of the golf swing growing up for me was I never understood rotation whatsoever, never understood, you know, transferring weight, never understood using the ground force, you know, all of these things, you know, that you start to learn, especially as everyone's getting smarter, you know, thanks to Instagram, because everything that is on Instagram is right. I just want everybody to know that. Yeah.
Disclaimer.
If you see 17 different teachers say 17 different things, they're all right.
Yeah.
But no, like that was one of my biggest things. I never understood rotation at all. You know, I was one of those guys that if you took a picture of me at impact, my hands and the club, everything was basically in a line. And I was probably, my shoulders were square with the target.
Yeah.
Instead of now, I would kind of understand where we need to be with rotation. I used to think we got to use our arms to get that club around and our hands and all this stuff. So, you know, you hit it around the course and it's okay. But then you start learning the golf swing. So you brought up early extension. What are some things that you see, kind of that first thing, you know, that you see the most that you've got to go, all right, first thing we need to do is?
Yeah, 98% of the time is people have the wrong conception of the weight shift, you know, air quotes, you know, it's more of a pressure shift, you know, because moving weight, you have to move the entire mass of your body. So what that means when I see, you know, people that come to me, their head's moving, you know, 6 to 8 inches to the right if they're a right-handed golfer and they're wondering.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
She sways.
Yeah, big time sway. And so people have that misconception. So that's usually the one I'm getting out of the way first because that's going to have a big impact on the quality of strike. Because if you figure you're moving your lower body and everything 8 inches away, you've got to move it 8+ more to be in the right spot for impact. So for most golfers, they can't move that fast and they're not coordinated enough to move, let's say 12 to 14 inches to be in right impact if they're swaying that much.
Right. Right.
So it's more of just, and that's where, you know, having the system in place, being like, all right, you can't control low point at all. So we got to go in and do low point stuff. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, this is where, you know, the stacking comes. So we stack a little bit more weight forward, kind of feel like you keep it there because you like to go 8 miles to the right. So it feels like you just stay over your left foot, yada, yada, centered pivot, you know, right wrist being bent back. And basically in the beginning, just having them hit like hard punch shots. You know, just like, hey, just right now we're going to hit punch shots. We're not going to see the ball go floating in the air. We're going to just hit bullets right now. And then once they get that in, they're like, okay, now we'll add the wrist stuff and just kind of go down that process with them. But most golfers coming in, they cannot control low point.
Do you know how many people though, like, I don't want to say people, a couple instructors that weren't like instructors for me. I didn't like seek them out. Just like the head pro at, you know, golf course here or wherever. They're like, no, you need to feel like you're in a punch shot. But I'd sit there and hit punch shots. And it's like, guys, this isn't going to work for me because I'm not rotating around enough.
Right.
So I'm literally in the same position that I was. Yeah. I'm just making a worse, shittier golf swing.
Right.
Because I'm like, you know, hitting early release punch shots. It's like, this isn't going to work for me.
And I think it's the big thing. You got to, you know, choose the words you're conveying to them. Be like, you know, hey, you're going to feel like the next 4 months, you're just hitting these low bullets. You know, you're not going to let the elbows bend. You're going to feel like the arms are super straight. I would say, hey, you're going to feel like Tommy Fleetwood in the finish, which is not a bad thing, by the way. Ooh. But it's like, that's what your feel and your concept in your mind is going to feel like. But you're going to, I put them on video and like, see, you're not really doing it as much as you think you are. It actually looks like a normal golf swing. And I was like, oh yeah, but it doesn't feel that way. I'm like, yeah, feeling real, buddy.
Yeah, feeling real is a real thing, you know, all the time. Like I'll mess with players in here, you know, again, not like trying to teach them anything, but the thing I see the most, and it happens to the people that hit the big block fades, they fan that club open first move. First move, I just open the door. I'm like, hey, it's okay to open that door, but if you don't close it, like you're mad at your wife,
you ain't
going to get that thing back to square and it's going to keep going right.
Yeah.
You know, so like kind of going, all right, I want you to think of John Rahm. Mm-hmm. You're never going to get there, by the way. You're never going to get to DJ. I used to be able to, and I can't bend my wrist that way anymore. Yeah. And that's probably, honestly, I've probably gotten better at that because, and I'm not as bowed.
Yeah.
Probably because my wrist just doesn't bend that way. So I've just over time gotten better. I don't know. I'm getting old. I got a hybrid. Do you know I got a hybrid? I have a hybrid. I'm getting old.
I remember. Yes.
Yeah, I'm getting old. And I'm going arm lock. So I'm getting old.
Man. Yeah, the jitters are starting to kick in.
Yeah, that's what it is. But so maybe if I just stopped drinking coffee, Diet Coke, and Diet Mountain Dew, I'd be fine. But whatever. No, but so I see that one a lot. The fanning the club open, having the toe pointed up.
Yeah. The mythical lag, you know, the down cocking. And it's like, oh, do you understand to be able to lag the club that much, how much extension your wrist gets in and, you know, with your lead wrist and just opens the face even more. Mm-hmm. And now you got to get all those angles out super fast. And oh, by the way, you got to square the face at the same time. It's like most people can't do it. Now, of course, you know, guys that have a stronger grip, you know, they're going to look a little cuppy at impact because they're so strong anyway. So you got to always look at that kind of stuff too. And some people you can fix that and they're good. And other people, like, it's a non-negotiable. You're not touching my grip.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well then this is what we'll have to go down. Wow. And yeah, I mean,
wow, that's tough.
Well, you got to,
that's like the first thing most people are doing wrong. Lot. Well, you know,
it's the whole, you know, gasp thing, you know, grip alignment, you know, stance and posture thing, you know, the PGA would teach way back when. So it's like, it's not necessarily now for a beginner. Yeah. You want to make sure they're set up right. They know how to aim. They got at least a decent handle on the thing. And cause you don't want them like crisscrossed or, you know, one strong, one super weak, you know, but if you look up and down the range at a tour event, you're going to see every variation of a grip.
Yeah.
But guaranteed they're actually, you know, when you look where it's running in the hand, it's going to be pretty similar, but it's not like the defining stuff to be really great at golf.
Right.
You know, there's going to be some funky one, you know, the baseball grip, you know, Piercy does it and he's made quite the nice living with been doing a 10 finger grip. So
I'm terrible at that.
Yeah.
I remember
no chance for me.
High school, I started out interlock. And then I think maybe my senior year, I went to overlap. And I always kind of wonder, I don't remember how I did it. I remember the pro at the golf course, you know, that I grew up playing. He's like, just when you're watching TV tonight and tomorrow night and the next night, just hold a golf club, you know, overlap. Right. And now when I go back to interlock, I mean, I feel like the club's about to go out of my hands. And I thought it was the more aggressive, stronger grip, but apparently not.
I tell you, I'm just the opposite.
Yeah.
I've been a interlocker since I can remember. Had tried it once at a suggestion. I felt like that club was going to go flying. I was like, I took five swings. I'm like, there is no way. I go, this is now a non-negotiable. I'm not changing.
You're now
that.
The guy.
I was like, nope,
non-negotiable.
Nope. I'm like, I know my hands are on it well just because I'm not interlocking or overlap. I'm like, I can't change it. For me, there, like, my feel like went away. Like, I couldn't tell where the club was.
Right.
Like, it just felt weird. Didn't do that.
No, it's tough. The grip is definitely a tough one. I try to tell, you know, people, because you see some weak grips and it's like the ball is going that direction and I know why, but I don't want to play golf swing today.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Because that's the thing in fittings, you don't want to come here and play golf swing all the time.
No,
you know, and that's really tough. But when you start seeing certain numbers, you show them, like, when it's all said and done, and you just change one thing. Like a guy the other day, just again, had him bone his wrist a little bit, because the first thing he did was what I was saying. He'd cup his right wrist so much at the top of his swing, it was wide open. It's like, buddy, we're never gonna get to that point, right?
Yeah.
And after we already kind of figured out what we're doing, once I had him, got him feeling like a little bit of a bowed wrist in his left, dude, he started compressing the ball.
Yeah.
He hit like little pole fades instead of like wipes.
Yes.
And it was like, oh my.
It's a game changer for
him. Gosh, it's really good. But, you know, now you got to work on it, the whole thing. So, you know, again, that's the biggest thing, right? When people get lessons, they're coming to you. They're working with you for an hour, hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And they might come to you once every week, once every two, three, depending on, you know, where they're at with the game and where they're at with learning.
Yeah.
But if they're not putting in the time, doesn't that frustrate you sometimes, though, as an instructor, when, you know, it's like, man, we did this. I'm taking your money. We're doing this, but you're kind of wasting it because we got to go back to what we just worked on 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, in the beginning process, when someone's going to commit, you know, to a long-term plan, it's very important that you have to work on this stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, one time isn't going to do it. I would say, you know, Tiger's done four or five swing changes and he never felt comfortable until, like, you know, what was it, 12 or 16 months that he felt like he owned it. This is Tiger Woods, the best player probably we've ever seen. Ungodly gifted. And it took him that long to feel in professional tournament conditions.
Yeah.
What makes you think that 10 minutes working on one thing one day a week, everything changes for you?
It's not going to. I've been there. It's not going to. It takes a lot of time. Now, I would say too, on the fitting side of that, and then we'll end this here. I think it's very funny that you brought it up, because every once in a while I'll joke around with players, right? And people will be like, well, if I go get fit and then I get into these clubs and then I change my swing, like, they're going to miraculously change their swing in a matter of a year. You know, like, you're just going to change everything. I tell them all the time, I'm like, I'm just going to let you know, Tiger's changed his swing like every 4 or 5 years, and he's been in the same shaft his entire career. So with that being said, you know, like, it's not going to change as much as you might think on that front.
Yeah, you would have to do something drastic.
Pretty much,
like,
right?
You'd have to, let's say they came in swinging 100, and all of a sudden they're at 130 or 120. It's like, yeah, okay, now it's different. But you
something
don't
just really happened here.
But you won't see that with the club-level golfer often, unless they're super committed. And obviously have to be a little bit younger, because, you know, you can only get so much as you age. I mean, we're all going to lose distance eventually. It's not fun, but I mean, it's just the reality of it. And, you know, having an older golfer that comes in, I'm sure that, oh yeah, I played 10 years ago and now I hit it 200. I used to hit it 250. But also in the back of your mind, like, bro, you never hit it 250.
Oh, man.
You hit it the one time off the sprinkler head, 40 mile an hour downwind. Dude, that's when you hit it 250.
People don't like, people tell you their number and they don't necessarily like what the actual average is.
No.
Because when you take average, and that's what I love about Arcos, when I have a player, it's so funny the difference of a player who just goes out and plays golf all the time versus a player who comes in, plays golf all the time, but has Arcos.
Yes.
Because they know their numbers and they know that number's real. And when they come hit balls in here, they'll go to their phone, we'll look at the dashboard, and it's like, yeah, that's about where we need to be.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's increase that. Let's make that better.
Yeah.
How can we make that better?
Huge.
It's amazing.
Yeah, huge. I'm an Arcos user too, and I always recommend my students. The ones that are serious, I'm like, get it. It's worth it. And here's the big thing is I can check on you.
Right.
Because it comes up on my dashboard too. I'm like, they'll come in, oh, my driver is terrible. I look at them like, yeah, but the drives you missed were just in the rough. So, not worried about that. No penalty strokes on those. So, but I'm like, man, you're like 2 for 30 on your up and downs. I think we may need to check on that, and maybe the ball striking into the green.
Yeah.
But maybe not driver.
That's so.
It does help, you know, focus a lesson in students too.
I think so. I think it's really good. Do you work with Arcos at all or anything? Or can I plug my promo code then? Yeah.
Do it.
Brian Golf. Go type in Brian Golf, save 15%, or maybe it's 20. It might even be 20% at ArcosGolf.com.
Use it. Yeah, but actually Michael Manavian kind of steered me in that direction.
Great direction to go in.
Yeah, I was like, well, this makes sense.
Yeah.
So I use it myself and it helps me. You know, sometimes, my driver was bad. And I look at him like, my putting from 8 feet was awful. You know, like, it's that kind of stuff that actually gives you a reality check and be like, hey, focus on that instead of chasing something that's, you know, not hurting your game.
I think so. Yeah. And that's fitting all the time. You know, when you're scheduling a fitting, and especially if you're, you know, you're working with an instructor. And instructors, we're going to know where your real strengths and weaknesses are, mm-hmm. instructors and fitters.
Yes.
You might as well just be up front and tell us. And if you're coming here, to your point, looking at for a new flashy driver, and you miss every green, and your iron play isn't good,
yeah.
I'm going to wonder why we're not looking at that, or vice versa, with any, you know, any club in the bag, it's going to be quite like that. Well, so
accuracy isn't sexy distances.
You know, what, but when you get older and the ball starts going a little straighter and distance isn't as much of a premium, and maybe it's, look, there's some guys that I've played with that they hit the ball. I'm a long hitter compared to most, right?
Yeah.
But there's people that outdrive me and I'm like, nope, not chasing it.
No.
I just want to hit in the fairway. Yeah, whatever iron I have into the green, it's
go
not
to your strengths,
make a
right? Strengths, man.
That's,
strengths.
That's what it is. So, Wes Altus, man, love having you in here teaching people. Love having you in here just to talk shop. And definitely appreciate you coming on the podcast. So, go ahead, plug it all. How do people find you?
Well, thank you for having me on. It's great to be in here. Everything is Wes Altus Golf, Instagram, Twitter, my YouTube. So there's some tips up there if you guys want to check that out. Instagram's just, you know, student swing changes and fun little stuff I like to put up about golf, you know, what everyone else likes to do. We all love this game. So anything to put up there, it's fun.
And then you can obviously, you know, reach out to me or Mel if you have any questions about how to find Wes. I mean, you know, we've had that actually happen on many times on the pod.
Yeah.
That's why when you were coming here today, I was like, let's just get him on the pod. So that way we have like a one centralized conversation that I can just guide people to.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we made that happen. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you, brother, for everything you've done.